This is The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. As we head into 2026, we here at The Green remain committed to putting a strong focus on the Delaware arts community through our regular arts segment, Arts Playlist. The segment is helmed by our local Morning Edition host, Martin Matheny. And we figured as we launch into 2026, it would be a good time to chat with Martin about some of the people and places he's got an eye on over the next few months. And let's start with the Delaware Symphony Orchestra, which has a new face of the organization as it starts 2026. Tell us a little bit about who that is and what she brings to DSO on the music side first.
Yeah, well, Michelle DeRusso is the new music director, new conductor of the orchestra after a lengthy search that ended up coming down to four finalists that each spent a week with the orchestra, each conducted a concert with the orchestra, and she was the choice. And I think she's a great choice, actually, because she brings, first of all, a really wonderful presence on the podium. I mean, there's no denying she is a fantastic conductor. One thing that I like about Michelle DeRusso's approach is what she brings in terms of repertoire and sort of her musical aesthetic, because she's got a devotion to the masterworks, but she's also got a real passion for highlighting living composers and sort of presenting this notion that a lot of classical music listeners wish were more widespread, which is that classical music is a living, growing, evolving art form. So if you take a look at sort of the rest of their season in 2026, the rest of this season that's going on right now, January 30th, they're at the Grand for a performance called Waltzing Through Winter, and that's going to be a lot of your traditional masterworks, the big Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto, Strauss, Rosenkavalier, Richard Strauss, not Johann, Ravel's La Valse, and then so three kind of very traditional Warhorse masterworks, and then you've got a piece by a living composer, Anna Klein, called Masquerade, written in 2013 for the BBC Proms. So a really interesting mix of music there. Then in March, they're back at the Grand for sci-fi, television, and movie themes called Across the Galaxy is the concert. You'll hear stuff from Star Trek and Star Wars and Doctor Who. And then they're going to close out this season with a concert at the Grand, and then 2 days later at Cape Henlopen High School. So that's another thing. I love that they're going on the road. That concert, Flames of Renewal. So another work by a living American composer, Carlos Simon's Four Black American Dances, which was written less than 3 years ago. And then Gershwin's Piano Concerto in F and Stravinsky's Firebird Suite. So the oldest piece of music on this final concert is just a little over a century old, which is last week in classical music terms.
And you mentioned they're going on the road and heading downstate to Cape Henlopen High School. And that's an indication, I think, that it's not just the music per se that she's focused on. She also seems to have a desire to build connections and reach out to the broader community. What has she told you about the efforts she's making in this area?
Yeah, I've talked to Michelle twice since she was officially named the music director for the orchestra. And this is something that always comes up. And here's something that she said to me when we spoke last fall.
We're talking about ideas of things we would like to do, but I came with ideas of doing, you know, pop-up concerts in different areas. So it could be like in a farmer's market, or maybe there's a festival happening. I think that people need to see us. We need to go to them too. I also think it is important to provide different kinds of experiences and not just masterworks.
So you can see this is something that is really important to her. I think it's something that is incredibly important to the future sustainability of orchestras, whether they're in Delaware or anywhere else in the world. You've got to bring music to the people where they are and start pulling down some of these barriers between audience and orchestra. And that's something that she's very passionate about and something that I think you're going to see in the years to come, too.
Certainly a way to build new audiences.
Absolutely.
So let's move over to the First State Ballet. What is first up for them in 2026?
They've got a great performance coming up in February at the Baby Grand, and I am here. This is my ride or die. I am standing up for contemporary ballet. It is awesome, and that's what this performance is. It's called Dreams in Motion, and you're reuniting the ballet with a frequent collaborator, Viktor Plotnikov, and if your ballet experience is things like Cinderella, Swan Lake, Nutcracker, mm-hmm. This is something that is not better, not worse, but very different when you're talking about contemporary ballet. It's two works. One is a fantasy to Dvorak, and the other is called Nonsense in the Sense of Innocence, which is a title that I love. Both of these ballets are going to tend a little bit more surrealistic, and you're going to see some really dynamic, really action-oriented motion and choreography, and some really colorful, cool costumes as well.
And the venue's worth noting, the Baby Grand. How does that change the experience for an audience, particularly maybe someone who's new to ballet?
Yeah, one thing that First State Ballet does a couple of times a year is they go into a smaller space, and they do it on purpose. So you don't have this massive gap between audience and performer. And so they're going to be at the Baby Grand for Dreams in Motion, and it's a more intimate experience. You're part of a smaller audience, and you're closer to the dancers, and you can really kind of admire not just sort of the macro version of what they're doing, but the technical expertise that goes into contemporary dance.
It's really, really interesting. How about Opera Delaware? It opens 2026 with a pair of shows right here in January. One is kind of an opera staple, so let's start with that one. What are we expecting there?
Yeah, so Pagliacci, everybody knows it, and you know, it's sort of your prototypical Italian opera about a love triangle and betrayal and tragedy, and it's great, and there's a reason why it's one of the most famous operas in the world. What they've done that's really interesting is they're pairing this with an opera that was written, gosh, just about 10 years ago, called Service Provider. And that opera is also about a love triangle, just in a little bit more of a comedic way. And what's interesting to me about Service Provider, and I can't wait to see this performed, is that one of the main characters in this opera is the humble cell phone. And I spoke to the opera's Carianne Ottagno, and she gave me kind of a nice description of what this opera is about.
Let's take a listen.
One of the characters is just the sound of ringtones, because that's how they end up getting caught. It's a married couple out at a restaurant for their anniversary, and the husband's mistress shows up, and text messages are going, and you're hearing the different da-da-da-da-da, the different ringtones and stuff. So that is a character in the show.
So it's a really amazing, interesting, timely concept. And by the way, the opera Service Provider is sung in English. So two kind of one-act operas, similar but different in scope and very different in tone, with kind of the same narrative backbone in a lot of ways.
But that second one being a comedy, being a little bit more modern, again, goes back to this issue of accessibility, right? That mm-hmm. that they're trying to maybe connect with audiences that might not be traditional opera audiences.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing that Carianne Ottagno from the opera mentioned to me is both of these operas, they go really well on the road. Mm-hmm. So this is something that, you know, they're looking forward to maybe in the future being able to perform one or both of these operas, not necessarily at their studios in Wilmington where this concert is, but say at a brewery or, you know, a kind of similar community location. So again, taking the music where the people are.
So let's wrap up with the Delaware Art Museum. They have an exhibition that you highlighted recently that focuses on race and identity in the world of illustration. And that field's a pretty expansive one, so it's going to hit on a lot of things that people are familiar with. Can you explain it a little bit to us?
Yeah, this is, to me, a really important show because perhaps more than what we might call traditional fine art, I think you get a picture of how society perceives things and people and groups through popular illustration, through what's in our magazines and in our newspapers and on our cereal boxes, right? So the Delaware Art Museum has put this exhibition together. They did it in conjunction with the Rockwell Museum in Massachusetts. And in fact, it's sort of a trade-off because they're sending that exhibition up to the Rockwell Museum fairly soon. It closes here March 1st. So as I said, I think it's a really important show. It's one where you're going to see some things that ask some tough questions and maybe is a little bit uncomfortable in the way that race is illustrated. A couple of artists that are in this show, one is a very famous Delaware illustrator, Howard Pyle, mm-hmm. and some of the work that he did. And then this one really kind of surprised me, but one of the artists in this show is Norman Rockwell. And when I think about Norman Rockwell, I think about Saturday Evening Post. Mm-hmm. I think about pictures of families and scenes that are incredibly white.
Mm-hmm.
But I talked to Heather Campbell Coyle from the museum, and she told me, yeah, that was correct for a while, and then Rockwell had a bit of a sea change, and this is what she said.
By the time you get into the 1950s and 1960s, Rockwell has realized that he wants to portray what he thinks is the most important thing going on in the world, which is the struggle for civil and human rights. And so he is turning his attention in new directions, and he has to find a new place to do that. And he goes and starts doing some work for Look magazine, which was largely a photojournalist magazine. But their primary focus was on current events. He stops working for the Post after 47 years and then begins to work for places that are going to, you know, put out the stories that he's interested in telling.
So Norman Rockwell, a huge artistic evolution, and this is just such a important show that, you know, it's definitely on my list of things for the first few months of this year.
And certainly, just kind of continuing with the through line of our conversation, because it's dealing with things that are often in pop culture, again, very accessible, things that people perhaps are more familiar with, and it doesn't feel like there's that kind of maybe normal gap between public audience and fine art, and, you know, that maybe sometimes people are threatened by.
Yeah, you know, not everybody has an oil painting in their home, but most of us have objects that are illustrated. So this is going to feel familiar, and maybe that sort of opens a door to asking some of the questions or responding to some of the questions that this exhibition asks.
Thanks to Delaware Public Media's Morning Edition and Arts Playlist host, Martin Matheny, for joining us this week. And Martin will be back in just a moment with the first Arts Playlist of 2026, which takes us to the Delaware Contemporary in Wilmington. Stick around for that on The Green, here on Delaware Public Media.